It's a pledge drive edition of our Week in Review. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 7 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Friday, March the 23rd. We are happy to have with us today two of our favorite Week in Review guests, your favorite Week in Review guests, Joe Winicky and John Sharpless. They will give us their views on the top state and national political news stories of the week, and we will welcome in your input, too. What story in the news this week is on your mind right now? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. But since this is our pledge drive, our spring membership drive, let me encourage you to also make a pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio. We are not going to take big chunks of time throughout this hour to ask you for your contributions. We want to devote as much time as possible to the Week in Review topics that we want to cover. So why don't you get it out of the way and make that pledge now of any amount. You decide how much to contribute to Wisconsin Public Radio. Just think about all that you value about this service, all of the information that you get every day, how much you can afford, and then make that pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, 888-202-2552. We have a goal of 60 pledges during this hour. It would be great if we could exceed that, as we fell a little bit short in our last hour, but we hope to hear from you. Help support the programming on Wisconsin Public Radio by making a contribution. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Let me welcome our guests. Very happy to have with us Joe Winicky, former state senator, former chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. Good morning.
Good morning.
And John Sharpless is with us. He is a professor of history at UW-Madison. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, I asked you both just before we started, what should we talk about first? And Joe Winicky, you said
Wisconsin basketball.
Why is that the most important story, do you think?
That was the most exciting Wisconsin basketball game I have ever seen. And I know I'm listening to people and talking this morning and the sports writers, everything else, about how terrible they lost and whether Jordan should have passed. But that was a great, great basketball game. It was exciting. I was just on the edge of my chair all night.
And they weren't supposed to win that one, but they came pretty darn close. Yeah.
Against the first or second best team in the country.
Yeah, and you were watching too, John?
Oh, absolutely. I think I was very disappointed, as I think a lot of Badger fans were, to come so close and then have come down to literally seconds in 1 point. As Joe and I can attest, losing the close ones hurt more. Actually, it's better to get spanked.
That's what usually happens in the NCAA tournament. You know, we go out with
But it's true in politics, Joe. It really hurts when it's close. And
we've both had that experience.
We've had that experience. So I'll say that I think a lot of the pundits said that the Badgers were going to have a so-so season this year. If you look back to the kind of commentary when the season started, they've come a long way. It's a great team. And
a lot of credit to Bo Ryan.
We got a good coach.
Hey, wasn't Marquette playing yesterday?
They got spanked.
They got beaten, too.
They couldn't shoot.
So right now, I think a lot of the people in Wisconsin, whether it was Marquette or the Badgers, are less interested in the outcome. I suppose if you're a Big Ten fan, you might root for Ohio State.
It's hard. My wife says no, but I'm always for the Big Ten. But that moves us on to Major League Baseball in the golf season. And for you, you get to be Farmer John.
So, and yeah, that's right. I mean, why you guys are really into this March Madness? You said that the Brewers are starting soon, talking about the penalties in football.
You're talking to a couple old guys. What do you expect?
That's right. You know, what's life without sports?
You know, nobody has lost the pennant yet, even the Cubs.
That's right.
I couldn't resist.
That's right.
They will after about five games, though.
No, it's there's always another season with another sport right on the horizon.
Well, as much fun as it is talking about sports.
And there is another sport coming up now. It's called elections.
There we go. And we're gonna turn our attention to the recall politics in Wisconsin. Lots lots to talk about there. Let's talk first about the 29 judges that signed the recall petitions. They signed petitions calling for the recall of Governor Walker. Joe Wienicke, was that a wise thing to do?
Well, I think for most of those judges, there was little or no chance that they would actually see one of these cases. It seems if you're not in Dane County or Waukesha County now, it's not a big deal. But I think judges have First Amendment rights, too, and they have a right to do whatever they want.
Yeah, there is a national group, a national conservative group, calling for an investigation of this. John Sharpless, is this a big deal?
Next to the infinite amount of hypocrisy that's available to Americans, there's a lot of indignation. I'm a little troubled by these guys. I think that there's a sort of image you want out of judges of being politically neutral. But as Joe says, they're perfectly free. There's no restrictions on them putting their signature down there. I just think in terms of...
It can put you in a sticky wicket if you get that case.
Given the problems we have in this state with our judiciary...
Agreed.
We would like to have the people believe that the judiciary is neutral. I think we all know that the judges do have biases, but we'd like to pretend they don't. And so those names remind us that politicians and judges really are about the same thing.
Also, in recall news, we have... A couple of things going on here. Malin Mitchell, who is with the Firefighters Union in Madison, announced that
he's also the head of the state association.
State association. He's going to run for lieutenant governor. That was expected, Joe Wienicke?
Yeah, it was to me. I don't know if it was to John, but that's kind of my political world, and I've been expecting that for some time. I think there's still maybe one or two others that may jump in that race, though.
Who?
Oh, I've got to believe Corey Mason would be thinking about it, for example, a good young legislator out of Racine. Brett Halsey's always wanting to run for something. So
I think, you know, next to Secretary of State, Lieutenant Governor is the greatest job in the world. You can play golf. You can go fishing. Nobody knows if you're there or not there. I want that job.
Mr. History Professor, what did John Nance Garner say about it?
A warm bucket of fill in the blank.
Yeah.
I don't know. I always get a big kick out of the battle for Lieutenant Governor.
You get to go to funerals.
Yeah, you get to go to funerals and...
Bar mitzvahs.
And you're ready, comma, heaven forbid, comma, to act in a moment's notice, to take hold of the
rules. Oh, yeah. Have you seen some of our lieutenant governors?
Yeah. So anyway, bless him. I think it's a more important, it's a symbolic run because... not so much that he's an African-American. He's head of one of the unions that was actually protected under the legislation. The firefighters and the police were exempted from the acts that fell on all the other public employees' unions. And this says to the public that those who were left as part of the state negotiating structure are still troubled by what happened to those excluded.
And Malin and Joe Conway and many of the other firefighters. I mean, when the protests really started to heat up at the Capitol, I vividly remember the first time that the firefighters came up with their bagpipes up State Street coming from the fire station number one along with a bunch of other people. And, I mean, it was stirring. I mean, of course, I like bagpipes.
Another development this week, Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett says he's going to announce whether or not he's going to run in a recall election against Governor Walker before the April 3rd mayoral election. Is he in or is he not, Joe?
In.
He is.
That's my guess. I got a fundraising letter from him 2 days ago. That's usually a surefire sign.
That's a sign.
that's a big sign, yeah. That's a big sign.
I think it's about time some of the big boys and girls in the Democratic Party stepped in here. We've talked about this before, Joe, and I've been a bit surprised that some of the leading Democrats in the state have backed off from this campaign. I've said before on the show, I think Tom Barrett's one of the sweetest guys in the state. He's really a decent man. His biggest problem over the years is he doesn't campaign aggressively. He presents a very low-key image. He he projects this sort of, well, if you elect me, I might show up at the Capitol, you know, and they're all really nice folks, and aren't we all really nice folks? And
isn't it something, though, John, that now humbleness and decency is a bad trait for our elected officials?
But I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that the public likes to see a politician with a bit of fire in the belly, a little, I really want this, I really want to serve you. And Tom, that's just not his personal style.
He has this one problem, though. I mean, he's stuck in a position where he's running for re-election as mayor on April 3rd, and it's very difficult to run for two jobs at once. I mean, the people that do it usually lose both.
A quick comment on the significance of the UW Teaching Assistants Association refusing to endorse Kathleen Falk in the recall election. Is that a big deal, Joe?
It's the Lieutenant Governor Syndrome. I mean, I don't think it's a big deal one way or the other. I think what it shows is there's not unanimity amongst organized labor in support of former county executive Falk. But that's not unusual in a Democratic race, or for a Republican race, for that matter.
It makes a difference locally, but statewide, it's of no consequence.
You know, there was another recall-related issue this week that a conservative group is filing papers for the recalls of Senators Bob Jauch and Dale Schultz over the mining issue. Both a Republican and a Democrat there who did not like the Assembly's version of the mining law changes. And Joe Winicky, your thoughts on whether these two state senators are in trouble for voting no on mining?
Oh, yeah, another Milwaukee group that likes to dabble in things, wants to dabble in southwestern Wisconsin and in the far north. I say good luck. My guess is Jauch and Schultz's position is wildly popular in their districts. And Republicans, they keep making Schultz act like he doesn't know anything about mining. I drove through his district on Monday and part of my day job. And, you know, those towns like New Diggings and Lead Mine. And I mean, this is where mining starts. When you see that miner on the flag, it came out of the southwestern Wisconsin. Dale knows this well, and I've been very proud of Dale Schultz in this whole thing. He's been a true statesman.
Mm-hmm. John?
I got to lead with a disclaimer. Dale Schultz is a friend.
He's a friend of mine, too.
I came to know him during my campaign and respect him, and he taught me how to be a politician, how to get out there and shake hands at the county fair and to be in the parade. Dale Schultz is a man of integrity.
I never saw Dale kiss a baby.
Basically, what they're saying here, and I'm a little tired of this from conservatives, is that if he doesn't march in single file and hum the song of the party and be absolutely obedient to ideology, you're out. It's sent to the gulag. It's just like the Communist Party of the 1930s. Republicans used to be able to vote their conscience, vote with integrity. This group is saying you can't do that. You have to be mindlessly obedient to the conservative ideology and the corporate interests that want to come into our state and are indifferent about our environment and whether or not this state is a better state.
And, you know, I've seen this happen. I believe in the two-party system. I think you need two or more vibrant political parties in a state or in a country. And what I've seen in the last 10 or 15 years with the Republican Party, as not one who is it, but to see really good legislators like Jody Hilsman and Mary Panzer and Peggy Rosenzweig all defeated in primaries, and then there happened to be, I'm not going to name them because it's out of decency, there happened to be a couple of gay men who were Republicans. And they were not, they didn't say so, but, you know, they had to quit too because they were going to be outed. What kind of, we're in the 21st century.
Let's take a call from Steve in Madison. Hello, Steve.
Yeah, good morning. The question is more for Joe, I think, wondering if he wants to say anything about a tight clique in the Democratic Party, maybe affiliated with Doyle, who decided that Barb Lawton will not be considered or financed or supported in any way for consideration for governor.
Is that right, Joe?
There's been that insinuation. I happen to like Jim Doyle. Jim Doyle gave me a job. I'm not going to say anything wrong, but I will say this. There were many, unlike the Republican Party, there, when Jim Doyle was governor, there were all kinds of liberal Democrats who thought he was some sort of evil empire or something. So I'm not convinced. I believe there's a wing of the Democratic Party that believes that happened. And it's possible that some of that may have happened. I like Barb Lawton as well. I don't have a problem with either one of them. But, you know, this is Jim Doyle may have supported somebody else. I don't know. But, yeah, I mean, Democrats have some of the same problems. They're not as pronounced on the social issues and the absolute lockstep vote. I mean, all you got to do is look at the voting patterns in the state legislature. The Republicans, except for Dale Schultz, vote lockstep on everything. But you're always getting a handful or more of Democrats voting against their party. Happens every vote.
Mm-hmm. There used to be a line about the Democrats, particularly in the Madison area, about how they eat their young.
There's some truth in that, by the way.
I'm telling you, it's always fun to watch a group of Democrats sitting around at one of the local watering holes talking. Where were you in the election of 1978? You know, that's sort of, there's long-standing bitternesses. I mean, just...
Were you for Carly or Schreiber or what?
Just talk to our current mayor for a few minutes about what he thinks about a lot of Democrats. Paul has got a lot of bitterness. It's a funny party in this county, and there's a lot of factioning, and there's a long memory. You guys have this memory about every damn election.
You know, it is, John, by any degree, I'm a Democrat, right?
Yes.
I mean, I was... you know, a member of the Democratic Party forever. I was a Democratic state assemblyman, a Democratic state senator. I was, I think by all accounts, a successful chair of the state Democratic Party. But many people in Dane County think I'm a Republican. I don't get it.
A quick comment on what's happening in the district where State Senator Pam Galloway, a Republican from Wausau, announced last week she was not going to. She was resigning from the state Senate. She was she is facing recall. Now, State Representative Jerry Petrowski will run in the spring recall election for that state Senate district. He will be running against Republican Donna Seidel.
Democrat.
A Democrat from Wausau. So what's going to happen there, Joe?
Well, they're both out of Marathon County. I don't think it changes the dynamic that much about the issues because Jerry Petrowski voted exactly the same way that Pam Galloway did. Donna Seidel is a really talented Democrat. I think very highly of her. I think she's got a very good chance of winning, and she has a head start in this race. Jerry Petrowski is a guy that has won. I mean, I got to give him credit on this. We've tried to defeat him several times with what I thought were decent candidates. He's survived. I just think that the passions on the Democratic side. I'm interested in something that John said a few months ago on this show, and it was when you had mentioned, and I think I'm saying this right, if I'm not, correct me, that at the time you thought that they wouldn't get the signatures necessarily, but if they did, the Democrats would be pretty good shape. Is that where you still think
That's
or not?
I still think. There's still a lot of anger out there.
Yeah, there is.
And you hit the nail on this. Is mobilized people who are normally indifferent to politics. It's kind of a left equivalent of the Tea Party.
Yes.
And there's just a lot of people who suddenly feel very angry about state politics. And I think what's going to happen here is a lot of innocent Republicans may go down in this that tried to keep a low profile throughout the Walker controversy.
Right.
I think this particular district is really up for grabs, and it may stay Republican.
It might. Of the three of the four elections that are up for recall, with the exception of Senator Fitzgerald, and I think he's just made enough enemies, that even could be an interesting race, were held by Democrats generally in the past, especially, by the way, the Marathon County area seat. I mean, that had been Russ Decker's and others for many, many years. The Racine seat does flip-flop, but tends to be on where the passion is, and I think the passion's on the Democratic side this year. And then the Eau Claire area seat has flip-flopped as well. Pat Kreitlow had it, but Dave Zien had it before that.
So. Let me jump in because we are past break time, and I need to remind listeners as well that this is a pledge drive edition of our week in review, and we're looking for your support for the programming that you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio. You decide how much to contribute to Wisconsin Public Radio, and it will help pay for our programming. Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. We are working toward a goal of 60 pledges during this hour. We have 6 pledges so far. So we are not coming to you and taking big chunks of the week in review to ask you for your support. So we really hope that you will take the time to show your appreciation for this kind of programming, and especially for our two guests during this particular week in review. You have told us many times that you appreciate hearing from Joe Winicky and John Sharpless. We do too. So please let us know that that this is a program that you listen to, that you value, that you will help pay for with a pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. No special thank you gifts during this hour. No bells and whistles. Just talk about the issues that matter to you. Oh, I forgot, we do have actually a little incentive. If you want to help the hungry, as well as help Wisconsin Public Radio, for your pledge of $120, you can ask for your thank you gift to be Food for 40. And your pledge will help pay for 40 meals for people in need. So that's Food for 40 at the $120 level. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. This is our Week in Review, talking with Joe Winicky, former state senator, former chair of the Democratic Party, and John Sharpless, a professor of history at UW-Madison. And our next caller is Nate in Milwaukee, and he will bring up the next subject that we'll talk about. Hi, Nate.
Oh, thank you for letting me do that, then. I was going to point out that some of the maps had been thrown out by judges. And I thought this was an excellent time to perhaps fix or at least discuss the issue of having the political parties essentially try to draw their own maps so they can rig elections to their favor, because I figure there is a real problem if you have, say, 55% of the people in the state voting for one direction in the state legislature and somehow the other party wins that particular year.
Well, thank you very much, Nate, for bringing up this issue, and we'll talk about some fixes, perhaps. But let's first react, John Sharpless, to this judge who, I guess, said the Republican redistricting plan was okay, except for two districts in Milwaukee that they would have to be redrawn.
Apparently, is that the case? I haven't seen the decision. Joe says he's taking a look at it. One of the reasons, my suspicion is that they have some Supreme Court precedents for those districts, and that's why they feel they can leverage that. You know, judges would prefer to be completely out of this. I remember about two decades ago, Scalia gave a speech, I think, at the University of Chicago Law School, in which he felt, and this is very interesting coming from a conservative, that reapportionment and redistricting should be done by commissions and not by politicians. And I really support that view. Iowa does that. The model is right next door for us. And we forget about this until it arises every 10 years. But it's the most, I would say, it's much more than money. It's the most corrupt aspect of our political structure, because it embeds a party. Not for an entire decade, because the people move around, but at least for the first half of the decade, they capture the state house and the seats, and they reinforce congressional seats. It's just not the way it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. Joe?
I did read all 38 pages of the decision, and it is fascinating. If you want to cut to the rub of it, and also so is the political response. So the Fitzgerald brothers said they won, and Peter Barca said he won, and neither one really won. The people lost. What the judges said is, and it's based on precedent, John, you're correct, is that based on past precedent, that they met many of the standards that you have to do, the biggest one being population deviation, which isn't very hard in the computer age. You could actually get this down to within a few if you wanted to. But they did a couple other things. First of all, they totally attacked and chastised the Republicans for their secrecy. Then, something I've never seen in a court decision, this was a three-court judicial panel, two Republicans and a Democrat. I don't blame the partisan makeup of that. I think they came up with a relatively reasoned opinion, if nothing else. But what they did, John, and it's just what you said, and I agree with you on this, by the way, that they said perhaps the legislature should do what Iowa or California is doing and take this out of the hands of these crumb bums who totally feather their own beds every time they do this, depending on who's in power. And I wish the court had redrawn the map completely, but they didn't. But what they did say is that in an effort to dilute the Latino vote in Milwaukee, they may have diluted the power of Latinos, which is past precedent in the courts. And that, so they came up with a map. They had to move pretty soon. Believe it or not, nomination papers now start on April 15th because they moved the September primary to August. So it's less than a month. It's 3 weeks away.
Wow.
Another issue from the news this week, a Dane County judge refused a request from Attorney General J.B. Van Hollen to lift an injunction on enforcing the state's new voter ID requirements, saying no. So I guess voter ID is not going to be needed for the next election, Joe?
That's like, I'd be stunned if the Supreme Court jumped in right now. It would add complete confusion to the April election. Perhaps they will. And with this crazy court, I hope we're talking about that later. But the Nice decision was extremely well done. And I loved it because a judge spoke in English. It wasn't, you know, they have all the little, you know, things from the prior case law. But it just laid it out, and it was so well. I don't know Judge Nice, but I was very impressed by him. It was a very well-done decision. I don't understand this desire other than to get people not to vote. Why we don't just make voting easy in this state? We used to.
That's so the Democrats are always sneaking in Canadians to vote.
That's right. Oh, yeah. And
yeah. I was told that after my election. A sweet old lady called me up and said, Mr. Sharpless, the reason you lost to Tammy Baldwin is that she had Canadians sneaking down here to vote for her.
And I have a daughter named Gracie. She's my golden retriever. She must have voted, too.
Yeah, she's a Canadian.
Well, the director of the Government Accountability Board does say that poll workers will be prepared to implement the law if it's reinstated before the April 3rd election.
Well, they know how to do it based on the fit. By the way, I won't, because I know them all. But these poll workers do not like this law. It will in November. It is going to slow the train down much that a casual voter may not vote.
Well, and this is a case that was saying that voter ID, having to present a photo ID to vote, it violated the Wisconsin Constitution. So this is different than maybe some that have gone before the U.S. Supreme Court.
I don't, you know, I'll have to read this decision because
it's relatively short.
I don't know what about the Wisconsin Constitution bars photo IDs. The Supreme Court of the United States has held that photo IDs, that requiring identification, that's a little different. Requiring identification at a polling place under law is not unconstitutional. The court also said, and they were very clear on this, if the law is passed to obstruct voting, it's unconstitutional. So they kind of left it to...
I think you're very close to the Nice decision already. And the other thing is, too, it can only be the specific state-issued ID. You can't have, you know, a veteran's ID.
You can't have a veteran's ID.
Well, they got turned down by a number of polling. Well, you got to remember, a lot of these poll workers, they're just ordinary people trying to do their job and do it well.
Well, presumably this will end up before the Wisconsin Supreme Court, and there's some trouble on the court. Well, Justice David Prosser said this week that he will ask other members of the Supreme Court to recuse themselves from deciding on any disciplinary action on this complaint that was filed against him last week. He violated judicial ethics by placing his hands around the neck of Justice Anne Walsh Bradley, according to the Judicial Commission. He, of course, defends himself. But what in the world, Joe Winicky?
Well, you know, Justice Bradley put her neck in his hands. And then after that, of course, it was just, you know, and he didn't call Shirley Abramson, the Chief Justice, a word we won't use here. And then the Judicial Commission, which is the quasi-body that makes determinations on this, is now a political front group. And the other judges couldn't possibly
make a decision on this because they're all biased. Well, that means, I mean, is it just Jesus who can make this call or who? I mean, this is Dave Prosser. I've known for 29 years. I'm wondering, and I hate to say this, but I'm wondering if he's fit for the bench.
Well, it says here that if the other Supreme Court justices did recuse themselves from making a decision as to whether he should be disciplined or not, if they would recuse themselves, it's an action that would just kill this case. It would go away.
Of course it would. All the Judicial Commission can do is cite what they felt were violations of the ethic code and then present that report to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court in Wisconsin determines the final adjudication of ethics issues, and that's true for lower level judges and prosecutors and actually for attorneys in some case. So it would have to be the Supreme Court that decided, and then this is almost unheard of. They'd have to decide on one of their own members.
Right.
So I do understand David's argument that none of them can decide on him because all but Crooks were there that day. But he doesn't want Crooks to decide because he says Crooks knows the other participants, and so he's biased.
Yeah, I would hope one of the justices would actually know the other six.
By the way, I just think this is so sad. And like Joe, I like David Prosser. He's a sweet man. I don't know how this whole thing is unraveled. It's sad that the Supreme Court has reached a point where personality is more important than justice. I've come to a point where I'm not sure I can trust this court, not simply David,
but
as a whole,
that's fair,
to function in a way that we want out of justice in Wisconsin. They're acting like a bunch of kids in a playground. I don't know how you bring order to this place. They're deeply divided, and it's very troubling. You want the people at the top of the judicial system to be restrained, not mud wrestling on the floor.
You know, and whether you were, you know, as an individual, whether you were seeking justice or you were a defendant charged with something, the one thing that has made our system work for 200 plus years is you had some faith that the judiciary was impartial, that they'll call balls and strikes, even though John Roberts said that and doesn't. But, you know, that you have at least a chance to prove your innocence or for somebody to prove your guilt.
And what you don't want is that their personality squabbles takes precedent over law. You don't want them deciding their position not on law, but because they don't like the other coalition that's formed around that issue. I'm moving toward a position of not trusting this group as a whole.
We need, again, to take our break, and I'm going to do something a little bit different here. I'm going to issue our Week in Review quiz question right now, and you can call in if you think you know the answer to this, and if you are the randomly selected winner, we will send you one of the books we featured on the program recently. Here's the Week in Review question. You've probably heard by now about all the weird bangs and booms in Clintonville, Wisconsin this week, but that's not the only place in the state where there's a whole lot of shaking going on. Have you heard that there is another Wisconsin community reportedly becoming a boom town? What other Wisconsin community did report one night of some booming and banging? And by the way, Clintonville, according to the U.S. Geological Survey, did experience an earthquake this week. A magnitude 1.5 on the Richter scale was registered on early Tuesday morning in Clintonville. So now that seems to be the answer there, at least part of the answer as to why they were shaking around, some mini quakes beforehand and some aftershocks afterwards. So an earthquake in Clintonville. Well, what other community is reporting some booming and banging? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. This is our Pledge Drive edition of the Week in Review. We'll get Joe Winicky and John Sharpless to talk about some national issues in the news this week in our remaining minutes. But I need to remind you that this is our spring membership drive, and we are working toward a goal of 60 pledges. I kind of had you on the honor system. I thought that you would just call in, even if I wasn't asking you every few minutes. We have 53 pledges to go. That's great, but we need to hear from you, too. WPR.org, WPR.org to make your pledge of any amount, or 888-202-2552, 888-202-2552. Make a pledge to support the Week in Review and to help pay for all of the programs that you value on Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, well, let's talk about it's a sad story, but let's talk about this case in Florida where a 17-year-old African American boy was shot and killed by a neighborhood watchman who was apparently employing the Florida Stand Your Ground bill. Joe Winicky, your thoughts on what's going on in Florida?
It's a tragedy, but hopefully it will wake some people up. You know, a very similar thing happened in Wisconsin about 3 or 4 weeks ago over in Sheboygan. The cops busted some underage beer party, and some 20-year-old, and I believe he was African-American, was hiding on a porch. I assume just hoping the cops don't find him so he doesn't get in trouble. Some guy blows his, you know, kills him by shooting through his window.
And it was decided this week that he would not be charged under the Castle Doctrine.
What is the risk? I mean, I understand if somebody's coming into your house and you have fear or something, but even in the old law, I doubt very much you'd be charged with anything. But you know, I'm all for guns. I don't have a problem with guns. But at what point do we just lose any sense of normalcy? I mean, does everybody have to carry an Uzi? And can you kill anybody else no matter what just because you want to?
John?
Well, I'm the Second Amendment guy on this show.
Yeah. Well, we had to disagree somewhere, Sharpless.
And I feel very strongly about a right to protect home and hearth. It's unfortunate that the kid on the porch got shot, but in truth, sorting that out for a homeowner is in many ways not the homeowner's business.
And he shouldn't have been on the porch, I know.
Okay. And it's a tragedy that just being on a porch resulted in the death. The incident down in Florida is much different. That young kid on the street had just as much right to be on the street as the man who shot him. Fortunately, in Wisconsin, and I know there's been some recent comparisons, under Wisconsin law, even as it's been revisited and changed, you cannot attack people on the streets The Wisconsin law is quite clear about provocation. And there's another thing I think people have to understand about the Wisconsin statute. It's a plea. It does not automatically free you from an obligation to be tried for manslaughter or for murder. It's a plea. It's a plea that the prosecutor can take into account and not bring it to trial. Or if the prosecutor brings it to trial, you can introduce it in court.
Yeah, as a defense.
In Wisconsin, a self-defense claim does not mean an automatic dismissal. Now, I don't know about Florida. Apparently, in Florida, it's an automatic dismissal. That would be perplexing to me. But in Wisconsin,
yeah, the kid was attacking this guy with his Skittles and his iced tea.
Yeah.
The shooter claimed that he was acting in self defense. It appears the police initially believed him, but now it looks like that might change.
But let me make an argument opposite of what I just said. If the police made a charge based on what they thought was best evidence, but now because this has become a nationalized sensational issue and they changed their mode just because of pressure, that isn't right either.
You know, this is a very troubling, sad story in Florida. The lynch rhetoric is kind of bothering me here. We're now reacting to the tragedy of the young man being killed by crying out that we should lynch this other man and hang him from the tree as quickly as possible. What I was pleased that the governor of Florida stepped in and appointed a special prosecutor. This has to be diffused. It does.
Oh, because yeah, there's going to be more murder otherwise.
I don't know what went on in that in the shooter's head. I don't know if he was if it was racism or if it was fear or if he suffered some kind of. Remember Barney Fife on
the one bullet in the pocket.
You know the Barney Fife syndrome, where you strap a guy strap a gun on a guy who's very self conscious about his manhood, and he walks around town and intimidates people. I don't know this man's personality, but there's a lot of lynch rhetoric right now that's just as troubling as the shooting, and this guy should not be tried in the streets of New York. A demonstration in New York demanding this guy's head on a platter. I don't know what's going on in America. We're going to respond to a violent moment with violence? What is this all about?
It's real. This is a clear case where both the state and federal departments of justice need to do a thorough look at this, and we better live with whatever they come up with.
That's what's happening. Now, let's turn our attention to the presidential race. Let me just say to you, John Sharpless, Etch-a-Sketch.
What?
the Romney aide this week said that Mitt Romney could just push the reset button after the primaries, and just like an Etch-a-Sketch.
Well, the great thing this morning, my computer opens up to the Google News window, and it turns out sales for Etch-a-Sketch jumped
through the roof.
gone through the roof, and bless it, it's one of my favorite toys. My kids had three or four. I think I played with Etch-a-Sketch more than my kids did. So if it revitalizes the Etch-a-Sketch market, I'm in favor of it. This is a non-issue. This is dumb.
Why is it dumb?
This is absolutely dumb. So here's an aide who perhaps chose the wrong analogy. That's it. It's done. It didn't come out of Romney's mouth. It shows me that Gingrich and Santorum are desperate. If this says anything about, and you guys know I'm not a big Romney fan, but this says nothing about Romney. It says nothing about his campaign. This is dumb. You know, why don't you get back to real issues, guys? You know.
Well, let's see. Romney and Santorum are going to be visiting Wisconsin before the April primary. In the news that. I guess Wisconsin matters, Joe Winicky?
Well, I must say it really is dumb, the Etch-a-Sketch, but the problem is it epitomizes what's wrong with the Romney campaign, is that every other day it's he's flip-flopping this way, or he's trying to prove his manhood by seeing how far right he can go as Santorum, and the notion that you can just wash that away in the general election just isn't true. Yeah, I'm glad Romney's campaign went to the Hubbard Street Diner in Middleton. That's probably, let's see, that area of Middleton's only about 78% Democratic. I mean, good advance work, guys.
I'm telling you, this primary is crying out for Democrats to do mischief. I mean, here are the Republicans battling it out, and the Democrats don't have anybody on their side of this primary. I could see thousands of Democrats coming in and having fun with this election, perhaps making Santorum the victor.
The problem, I agree with you that there's great potential for mischief. The problem is this. What if he wins?
Santorum?
Yeah. No, I mean, in the long run, I mean, Democrats are scared to death of him on issues.
We're going to have to leave that question to be answered at another time. Joe Winicky, John Sharpless, thank you both very much for being here. This is our Pledge Drive edition of the Week in Review. We need to ask you now for your support for programs like this one and guests like this one by going to WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Make your pledge of any amount to support Wisconsin Public Radio. We are looking for another 50 pledges during this hour. And we can do it with your help, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Joining me now is Cheryl Gasser. Good morning, Cheryl.
Good morning, Joy. Off to a very nice start this morning. 10 pledges in already, but let's 11. Let's hear from you for, if you are a fan of the Week in Review, we want to hear from you this hour with your pledge of any amount, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I want to thank Ned from Green Bay, who says, I wait wake up to Wisconsin Public Radio. I listen to it on the way to work, and I turn it on as soon as I can after work. Thank you, Ned, for pledging to Wisconsin Public Radio. And Allison in Fort Atkinson also pledged. She says, Wisconsin Public Radio is always interesting. Nothing like it in any other place that I've lived. Allison, thank you. Now, how about you making that pledge? Make that commitment to support financially a service that you value, that you gain something from. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And it really only takes a couple minutes, 2-3 minutes of your time. You can support Wisconsin Public Radio. You just give us your name, contact information, how much you'd like to contribute, and how you'd like to pay for it. And whether you call or pledge online, we keep your personal information safe. We don't share it with any other organization. So make a pledge now in support of the Week in Review and all the political coverage that Joy and her team bring you day after day at WPR.org.
We talked about the latest developments in the recall elections and new candidates that are on the scene. We talked about the voter ID legislation, the redistricting decision, talked about the presidential race and some of the new developments. We do this every week during the Week in Review. It's sort of a recap of the issues that we've covered all week. So if this kind of political coverage is what you enjoy the most, make your pledge now during the Week in Review. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And Joy, I'd like to just talk about you for a minute, because whether you're talking state politics, global affairs, personal health, personal finance, you are amazing. You move from topic to topic, hour to hour, and you do it with such grace. You're so informed. I don't know how you do your job, and I think listeners out there are thinking the same thing. And if you are and you're not a member, please contribute to this incredible program with great hosts like Joy and Kathleen and Larry. The list goes on and on. It's a unique service and it's worth your support. WPR.org.
And Cheryl, thank you so much. I'm blushing, of course, and I wouldn't be able to do it without my producers, Rob and Amanda and Bill, and listeners. The listeners who call in really add a tremendous amount to this program, and they might think of a question that I didn't have, or they might want to make a challenge that that they have, and they're so smart. I really give you so much credit, dear listener, for participating in these shows and for supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. I did forget that Jim in Oliva is the winner of our quiz, our Week in Review quiz. I asked what other Wisconsin community besides Clintonville was reporting shaking and booming this week. The answer is Montello. So who knows? Maybe Montello is also having some earth tremors from seismic activity. But congratulations to Jim. If you appreciate all of the producers, the hosts, the topics, the guests, our callers, make your pledge to support the Week in Review and Wisconsin Public Radio, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Help to pay for these great programs that you've come to depend on. We help you stay informed and entertained, engaged, and of course, we love to hear from you, whether it's over the phone calling into the show or posting a comment on Facebook. We count on you. And here, during this pledge drive, we're counting on you for your financial support. We're hoping to reach 60 pledges by 9 o'clock this morning. Please, if you're a fan of Wisconsin Public Radio and the Week in Review, make your contribution now at WPR.org.
And, you know, we don't have, I mentioned that we don't have a lot of you know, special books or big prizes for you during this particular hour, but we do have the Food for 40 option. If you pledge $120 right now, you can ask as your thank you gift for the Food for 40 gift. This will provide 40 meals to families in need in your area. So you can help the hungry and help Wisconsin Public Radio.
Absolutely. Let the impact of your pledge go beyond great radio to those in need in your community. So pledge right now any amount, but when you pledge $120 and pick food for 40 as your thank you gift, you can do that now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Joy, so far 9 new pledges.
That's excellent.
New members this hour. Thanks so much.
And still working toward that 60 pledge goal. We are getting closer and closer, and you can help us get as close as possible. You know, make that pledge too for hearing great guests like Joe Winicky and John Sharpless. Civil discussion on these issues, even though they have differing viewpoints on the issues. And we've heard from many of you that you love hearing these two together on the Weekend Review. If you haven't pledged for it, why not do that too? WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Your pledge really will make a difference. Do it now. Don't delay. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thank you so much. If you've pledged to Wisconsin Public Radio, if not, there's still time for you to register your pledge. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.